You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Sergio Garcia triumphs at the KLM Open in Amsterdam.
To be playing Holland for the first time and get the W is... it's amazing, it's a dream come true, and you know, it's I couldn't imagine a better week than this.
We'll hear more from Sergio later in the show. The Spaniard overcame the challenge of rising Danish star Nicolai Højgaard, who pushed the former Masters champion all the way.
It was fun out there. I got a good start, and everything just comes down to one putt, so I'm just very proud of getting a chance to get in a playoff with Sergio, so I'm pleased to be here.
Away from the events in Amsterdam, we'll also review a stunning Solheim Cup, one of the best ever, that ended with a wonderful win for Europe. Plus, we'll look ahead to one of the biggest events on the European Tour, the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. Lots to come, so stay with us. I'm Robert Lee, and in the studio with me, I have a man who knows a thing or two about the European Tour, the Challenge Tour, the PGA Tour. Are there any other tours? John E. Morgan. Johnny, how are you?
Yeah, been on them all, Rob. Yeah. Many times.
And succeeded in all of them. Thank you very much. We'll get into that a little bit later on. And also on the line, we've got golf journalist Michael McEwen, who's currently freezing his little tootsies off north of the border.
Good morning. Yes, it is very cold in Scotland, but it is Scotland nonetheless, God's country. So, you know, there are worse places to be.
And you were at the Solheim Cup. We will talk about that later in the show, but it must have been amazing.
Oh, yeah, it was absolutely incredible. You know, if you'd written the script for how it all unfolded yesterday, it had been chucked back at you and you'd been told not to be so ridiculous and come away with something a little less fanciful. It was a complete fairy tale ending and a wonderful, wonderful week.
Yeah, it surely was. Okay, let's start with the KLM Open at the International in Amsterdam. Sergio won his 16th European Tour tournament with an 18 under par, one-shot win over Denmark's Nicolai Højgaard, who's hardly been on tour at all. These two were followed by a trio of Englishmen, Matt Wallace, third on 15 under, James Morrison was a shot back, and Callum Shinquin didn't have the final round that he wanted.
No, Shinquin, I just want to give him a hug. I really do. I see that boy, masses of talent. And I just think, I don't know if he gets just too passionate, too pumped up, and it comes to the short game, short putts, and he just misses them, laps of concentration. But he got a nice big hug from Sergio anyway at the end, and yeah, commiserations.
But at least he's, you know, he's competing at the right end of things now.
Oh, he is. But mate, what a game he's got. He thunderbolts it, Rob. It
yeah,
goes
powerful.
Absolutely a country mile. I mean, he's a top class player, and I'm just waiting for him to just burst through the doors with a win.
Michael, what about the start that Højgaard made? Because he birdied the first, and he didn't look nervous. He looked very relaxed and at ease with himself.
Yeah, it's quite incredible, that, really, isn't it? When you consider this was, what was it, his seventh start on the European Tour?
Yep.
To me, it just underlines once again that all these new young players that are coming out on tour, it used to be that they would take maybe a season or two to find their feet. Now they're turning up absolutely ready and primed to win straight away. You know, you look at guys like Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolff, and, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if Højgaard was going to be the next one to do it. You know, it's amazing to see how fearless these young guys are.
Who do we blame for this, John?
Who do we blame?
Yeah, who do we blame? Who was the go-to guy that broke all the rules, came out straight away at a very young age and started being unbelievable?
Cool. Well, yeah, Tiger Woods.
Certainly Tiger Woods, and you might argue the winner of the KLM Open. You might argue Sergio as
well. Oh, Sergio, well, young pup. I mean, I remember a long time ago, British amateur, Royal St. George's, he caddied against me, caddied for Lara against me, and he looked in at this boy, he said, this boy's going to be a wonder kid. I went, who's he then? He said, his name's Sergio Garcia.
He wasn't pointing at you?
No, of course he wouldn't. But he was only 15 years old, he's only a babber, and he was like, you know, he's kind of like looking at me and looking at him, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, is he?
Because
and then, wow.
When
he,
you know, you see some 15-year-olds and they're kind of fully developed, they're like men.
Yeah.
But Sergio just looked like a little boy when he was 15.
A tiny little kid with magic hands.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? Sort of sparring through the first few holes of the front nine, and then at six, it all kind of happened. Sergio made a mistake. Shinquin birdied. Both tied at 17 under. Now's the time for your man to come good, Callum Shinquin.
Well, that was it, wasn't it? I mean, it's just... You know, it's frustrating. I mean, he had that shot, especially in the closing stages, where you just think, you know, he zipped, got it past the flag, he zipped too much, he's come right back off the front, nether bogey to add to his, well, horrendous bogeys and missed putts that he had. And you just look at him and he looks so deflated, and that shot, hoiking it left on the on the second shot to 18 and then, well, making another bogey. You just wanted him to hold that putt to tie up with Morrison, but it wasn't meant to be. And oh, I just want to put my arm around him.
Well, Wallace was going well on the front nine. Birdies at the odd holes, 1, 3 and 5. Sergio then 3-putted 7 and Shinkum was out in front.
Yeah, he was. He was. He was indeed. And I just thought, you know, this is it. Come on, Callum, you can do this. And adrenaline gets the better of him. I mean, he's flying things. I mean, he's got a pretty good short game on him. It's just, he gets, you know, when he was short side, forget the hole he was on. He was down bottom right-hand side, Rob, and he was just, and Michael, and he was just, he went for this bump into the bank, and he, like, flew the bank, too heavy-handed, went straight through the green, then played an amazing chip back, and then missed a little putt and made double, and you're like, oh, Callum, what are you doing, man?
Well, as you talked about, the battle on the back nine, bogeys at 16 and 17 for Højgaard and Wallace, yep. And then Sergio played the shot of the week at 16.
Yeah, I mean, a miraculous, well, phenomenal shot. When I was looking at it, it doesn't surprise me watching Sergio play shots like that at all. I mean, I've seen it time and time. I've got been the luxury of playing with him at the Byron Nelson, and he was just, it was a display, an absolute display. And whatever he does never surprises me, Rob.
How badly, Michael, do you think Sergio needed the win?
Oh, so badly. You know, he's had a really strange kind of year. He's looked at odds with himself, with the world, with golf. He's just not looked like a happy bunny at any point in the past, well, God knows how long, but certainly this season. He's looked angry, he's looked frustrated, and I didn't see this win coming. I've got to be honest, I wasn't expecting to see Sergio win anytime soon just because he looked in that bad a way. It's taken me a bit by surprise, but hopefully, whatever it is that's been going on, and no one really knows, I mean, there has to have been something, clearly, that's been eaten away at him, but whatever it is, hopefully that's now resolved. And you know, wins change everything as well. They can do wonders for your mood and for your life, for your circumstances. So hopefully he's turning a corner. But yeah, he badly needed it. I just didn't see it coming at all.
How about Sergio's timing to win in September with some big events coming up?
It's perfect. What momentum changer for him. I mean, now you've got some massive events. The whole Ryder Cup points start now, Rob, as well. I mean, it couldn't come at a better time for him. I got to say, though, going back to what you said, Michael, as well, just quickly with Sergio, back at Valderrama, I was on course walking around with Sergio, and he's blaming absolutely everything but himself. Absolutely everything. You know, looking at me, oh, John, what was that bounce like on the green? I'm like, Sergio, get over it, mucker. Just get on with your game. I mean, he's wondering why it's bouncing soft or it's bouncing hard. I'm like, mate, it's your golf course, you know, like the back of your hand. What are you having a look at me for and wondering what's going on? But like you say, some are underlying there, buddy, but it's nice to see him finally over the line.
Will Højgaard be absolutely thrilled that he competed, Michael, or will he be with a tinge of disappointment? Even at his very young stage of his European Tour career, will he have some regret over what happened in the final round?
Yeah, I think it'll be a bit of both. I mean, you know, yes, he's still very new to this, a bit wet behind the ears, and you know, as I said, 7 events in. So you've got to look at that and go second to Sergio Garcia, one of the greatest players in the last 30 years, a major champion, Ryder Cup hero. You know, most people would take that. But again, going back to the point about how primed and conditioned these young guys are as they come out on tour, they don't turn up to just settle for second. I mean, it's funny when you listen to them say, you know, I'm here to win. You know, I'm competitive. I'm in this field because I believe I can do it. It actually reminds me of Tiger with that famous Curtis Strange interview years and years ago.
Yes, I remember
when,
that.
You know, oh, you'll learn when Tiger said that he was out to win and yeah. I think maybe one of his first events. You know, well, he did learn clearly very well and very quickly. And I think that mentality has rubbed off on the guys that have followed in Tiger's footsteps. You know, certainly Rory would be a great example in the last 10 years, but more recently, you know, guys like Hovland and Matthew Wolff and Colin Morikawa, why not Nikolaj Højgaard too?
I remember, and you'll know very well, Michael, when he qualified to play in the Masters, Gordon Sherry said, I'm here to win. It didn't quite work out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. So it didn't work out, unfortunately, for Big Gordon.
Great guy, by the way. Well. Gordon, he's a great guy.
I mean, at the time, he was probably considered to be slightly, well, he'd be up there on a par with Tiger, you know, in that sort of stage in the mid-90s in terms of what people expected. He was the great hope, wasn't he?
He was, but yeah, he was.
Sadly, it just didn't work out.
Funny enough, I saw him recently at the Masters. He was very funny. We were trading old Bob Torrance stories.
Were you?
Yeah, we were just, the two of us just standing on the top of the hill right by the clubhouse at Augusta, just creasing up laughing. People think, what are those two laughing about? And they're all... They're all Bob stories, and as you well know, Michael, not fit for broadcast.
There is one. There is one, if you like. This is one of my favourite stories of all time. It's a really short one. So basically, Gordon was playing in the Scottish Open in 1995, and it was Saturday night, and he phoned up Bob, and Bob, in his typical Scottish brogue, answers the phone. He's like, "Hello," and Gordon comes on all flustered, and he says, "Bob, you'll need to come and see me. I'm hitting it all over the shop, and I can't go into tomorrow playing the way I'm playing." Bob says to him, "What's the problem, Gordon?" He says, "The problem is I'm hitting everything off the toe." "What?" He says, "I'm hitting everything off the toe. My driver, my wedges, my irons." He says, "Even my putts, they're all coming off the toe." And Bob says to him, "Well, where are you?" He says, "Where am I? I'm in Carnoustie, obviously." He goes, No, on the leaderboard. Where are you?" Gordon goes, "Well, I'm only a few shots back." Bob goes, "In that case, just you keep hitting it after the toe."
That's one I haven't heard, actually.
Yeah, that's a cracker. It's a stack and tilt one, boy, Bob.
Well, that's right. I could write a book, actually, on Bob Torrance-isms and Butch Harmon-isms. Yeah. None of them are fit for broadcast. Well done for coming up with one of those. That was really, really good. You know, all the Bob Torrance X's, if you can call us that, that spent time with him. Every time there's, you know, Harrington, McGinley, you can go all the way down.
Yeah.
And you just, over a quiet night and a chilly evening and a nice pint of ale, we just like to go down the Bob
Reminisce,
Torrance,
yeah.
The back catalogue, Bob Torrance back catalogue. It is hilarious. It really is. Let's get back to the KLM. So Sergio with a win becomes the third Spaniard to win that tournament. No prizes for guessing the other two. Go on, Johnny.
I'm going to go Alonso Bell.
Yes.
And, well, the mighty Ballesteros.
Correct. Well done. So there's three great names that are on that trophy now. Sergio, Sebi, and Jose Maria. Tremendous. Sergio Garcia said in social media reaction, "There's a lot that went into this win. We couldn't have done it without the support of my family, sponsors and fans, not only this week, but over the last year. Thank you all. 16 wins on the European Tour feels very good." And Matt Wallace said, "Thank you, KLM Open. I love Amsterdam." Congrats, Sergio Garcia and Nikolai, London bound for the BMW PGA Championship. OK, time to hear from the man who left Amsterdam with the KLM Open trophy, Sergio Garcia.
Sergio, after a topsy-turvy day, finally got the win here. What's it feel like?
Feels great. It was tough out there. It was breezy. It wasn't easy. Some of the pins were tacked, were difficult to get to. So, very, very proud of the way I played all week and, you know, under pressure and how where we are now.
In terms of 16th win, what does this mean to you compared to your other wins?
It's special. Every win's special, but this one, it's obviously very, very special because, you know, my wife, my daughter are here, some of my family are here. I think that also to be playing Holland for the first time and get the W it's amazing. It's a dream come true, and you know, it's I couldn't imagine a better week than this.
Even in other languages, Tiger has given the world the W.
He has,
Sergio, who's Spanish, I know he speaks English very well, has come out with the W. Tiger's given the world that, no doubt about it. He's thrilled.
Oh, he's over the moon, ecstatic, and why not? You know, any win, especially your 16th as well. I mean, what career he's had, though, Rob.
I mean, from a
young kid coming through, all the hype behind him. Yeah, went toe-to-toe with Tiger. Probably didn't see eye to eye many times, but, you know, it's just a case that two giants coming together, trying to knock one another off their perch, and obviously Tiger got the upper hand on that. But, you know, it's nice to see him back in winning ways, and just hopefully his temperament's just cooling off a little bit after that win now.
I wonder, Michael, if he's a goal setter, Sergio. I always get the impression he's not. He plays and whatever happens, happens, but I suspect he doesn't put goals in front of himself.
I think you're probably right. You know, he doesn't give that impression at all. I think he feels it, doesn't he? Goes from round to round, week to week. Because I think for so long, the goal for Sergio was to win a major.
Yeah.
And then it went on, and he finally did it. Now, I think, 39, 40 next year? I think he's just playing it out and quite content to see what unfolds next. He's a guy that doesn't really need or want for anything in his life or his career at this point, even though he seems as though he's quite unhappy at times. He's got it all, so... Yeah, I hope that, like Johnny says, it's going to curb his temperament a little bit and just chill him out. I think that's been Sergio's biggest problem his entire career, aside from some questionable putting from time to time.
Well,
I think his problem's just been that he's so tense.
I was going to say that, Michael. His putting, I mean, he changed his grip again this week. I mean, he's had the claw grip, gone to conventional again. He's kind of lengthened the putter so he can get the arms kind of more tucked in and feel like there's a little bit less going on. And... But all his temperament, where he seems to lose it, is just by him missing putts all the time, which has been his Achilles heel for quite a while. And I just think it all stems from that. And once he figures that one out, which is a, I know it's a bit like a lottery ticket in a way, putting, once it kind of goes, it's hard to get it back. But you think to yourself, you know, once he gets that solved, his temperament will be hunky-dory.
What do you think drives Sergio, Michael?
Oh, great question. At this point, I genuinely don't know, because I think for so long it was just to get over the line. Initially, I think it was to be, you know, the world's best golfer. When he first came out, we remember the eyes closed behind the root branches at the PGA in 1999, that famous shot, and then running up the fairway. I think at that time he played with a bit more abandon, played a bit more by feel and instinct, and I'm pretty sure wanted to be the world's best golfer and a multiple major winner. I think what drove him then after that was just to get across the line. Now, it's really hard to say. I'm not sure if anything drives Sergio at this point. I think a lot of the time he looks to me like he's going through the motions, which I hope isn't the case. And I actually, this is terrible to say, but I actually kind of hope that there is some kind of, or has been some underlying issue that he's had to resolve that has caused this strange behaviour this year, this moodiness. Because if there's nothing, and that's just him resorting to being the type of person that we kind of hope he's not, if that's just who he is now, then that's really disappointing. So, like I say, I hope that if there has been something, it's resolved. And, yeah, look, I'm not quite sure what the rest of Sergio's career is going to have in store for him. It's so tough to say.
Well, you know Sergio well, Johnny. I mean, even from a young lad, he's always had that bit in him, you know, kicking the shoe at Wentworth all those years ago and slinging clubs into ponds. And he's always had that little bit of an angry man in him. He's always had that.
He has, Rob, unquestionably. And that's what drives him. I mean, we see it in Matt Wallace, you know, exactly the same, kicking himself, kicking and screaming like a sport brat, you know, not getting his right toy. But it's Sergio is one of those guys that it seems to drive him, give him the kick up the backside that he needs, you know, gives himself a quick turn off and then wipes the slate clean, gets to the next shot and it's all forgotten about. In recent times, like you said though, Rob, it just seems like he's holding on to it that little bit longer than he ever has. And I think that's why he's fallen down in his, you know, his playing abilities recently.
Are there more majors ahead for Sergio Garcia?
I think when you can drive it and shot make like Sergio, yeah, there always is an option for another major, without question. It's all down
it's
to the putter
him,
for
him. Isn't it?
It is up to him at the end of the day.
His headspace, if he's
it
got
is.
That right, he's still a phenomenal ball striker. What a player Sergio is. Great win at the KLM. And we should also mention Nicolai Højgaard, who was fantastic. Seventh event on the European Tour, nearly won. Let's get his verdict on a performance that few would have predicted.
Nicolai, so close. How much did you enjoy today?
It was fun out there. I got a good start and everything just comes down to one putt, so I'm just very proud of getting a chance to get in a playoff with Sergio, so I'm pleased to be here.
How close did that putt look on the last?
It was close, but when I hit it, I knew it was left, but it was still close. I'm just very happy to have it like a putt to force a playoff, and I'm speechless right now.
Obviously, huge confidence and experience game this week. What can this week do for you?
This week can mean that I'm playing European Tour next year. I'm a bit in between with everything, so hopefully I'm on my way out there. So, yeah, that would mean a lot, yeah.
You know, from his words there, Højgaard has definitely taken all the pluses out of this, Johnny.
Oh, he has. And, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, second at the KLM, 18 years old, with a game, you know, watching him coming down the stretch, looked like he's been there before quite a few times. And that was what was mesmerising. I mean, he was blindsided quite a few times with his second shot coming into some of the later par fours. And, yeah, made mincemeat of it. Did the old Sergio run up to the top of the hills to see where they were going. Totally so hungry for it. Great putter as well. And like you said, he knew that putt wasn't online on the last. But I think there's some great stuff to come. And he's got a brother as well. He's supposed to be pretty red hot.
They always say the brother's better, don't they?
Yeah, they
he's
do.
He's got a brother. They always said that about Seve. He's got a bunch of brothers. He's got, they're better than him. Really? There was a 20-year-old winner last night on the PGA Tour, Joaquin Niemann.
Yeah.
Man from Chile and younger than Rory and younger than Seve when they first won.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. Where'd they get them from?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just out of Pampers.
Well, Matt Wolf was the youngest ever.
Yeah.
Winner, and he's sixth in that list. And Rory and Seve are behind him, so that's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. You just get out of school and you're threatening for wins. Unbelievable.
Good performances from Matt Wallace and James Morrison. I watched James Morrison practice Michael at the range at the Wisley a few weeks ago, and he was just sort of getting back into playing some golf and he'd had stuff that had been going on, and I said, mate, you are swinging it really, really good. It's funny, you can tell on the range of someone, even if they haven't done anything for a while, is ready to play well again. Here he is, performing really nicely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like you say, he's had his demons to battle in the last wee while. But yeah, he seems to be swinging it a hell of a lot better now. And you're right, it's funny, when you think back to even the Open last year, I remember Dennis saying that he told Francesco Molinari's caddy on, I think it was the Tuesday or the Wednesday at Carnoustie, he said he's just swinging it so well and he's in such control of his game. He says, I think he's going to win it this week. So it's just, like you say, you look at players in the range and you just develop that instinct. So I'm glad to see James is back. You know, he's a great ball striker, always has been. He's a proven winner. But I think the question a lot of people had was, well, where did he go? He just seemed to disappear very fast and very quick, you know, very quietly. Good to see him back. I hope he has, a bit like Sergio, conquered whatever demons he's had to deal with. And, you know, fourth at the weekend there, it'd be great to see him close out a win before the end of the season.
Yes, it would. And what about, let's have a word, Johnny, for the players that have got to this point, September in the year, tournament's starting to run out and they haven't made enough money to keep their cards. What's that like?
Well, there's no worse feeling. Time is running out and the line is getting closer. And, I mean, you go home, you try and reassess, you try and find something. You're asking all the questions known to man to any Tom, Dick and Harry that you can absolutely find to pick their brains and see if they can come out with the secret to the game of golf and get you over the line and see you for a job next year. It's a horrible place to be in. I've been in it. Have you ever been in it, Rob?
Yeah, sure, yeah. And, I missed by a spot. I was guy that was, at the time, it was 1-2-6. I finished 1-2-6. Get your bags packed, you're off to the school!
Oh, mate. There's
it doesn't feel like that.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And that, you know, that brings another different, you know, pressure, trying to get yourself back into the groove. And you want to get back there where you were the year before and be playing, but you've got to go through Q score. And we all know how vigorous and how draining that procedure is.
OK, Johnny, give me the top 10 then from the KLM Open.
The top 10 from the KLM Open. Well, it was a nice Chilean, like you said, Joachim Niemann, you know, the other Chilean, Hugo Lyon. He was there, tied for seventh, though, but just behind him, sorry, Bradley Dredge, the Welshman. Then you had Lochan Jorgen, young boy that we've been waiting to see him come through in flying colours. He's coming on strong. Will Bessin, used to play with him. Nice, you know, the highest finish for the Dutch guy there. Then you had Rickard Karlberg, nice to see him back. He's obviously suffering with Lyme disease, so he's taking the pills for that, and he seems to be coming back nice and strong. Callum Shinquin, then you've got James Morrison, Matt Wallace in third, well, and then the young buck, Nikolai Højgaard in second, and then mighty Sergio Garcia.
Very nicely done. Last week's predictions, as per usual, Dan Roebuck. I build up a lead, and he just gives it away. This is how it worked out. This is what we do every week. You get two picks. One has to be anyone you want. One's got to be from outside last year's top 50 in the race to Dubai. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20. But minus 5, crucially, Dan Roebuck, if you missed the cut. He went for Lee Westwood, who emceed. So he gave me a little minus 5 points.
Oh,
and
no.
Sam Horsfield tied 49th, 0 points. So minus 5 for Roebuck. The man who studies algorithms across all the betting sites. He knows all the odds, all the form, all the strokes gained. Absolutely 100% useless. Warren Humphreys, Martin Keimer, minus 5, and Thomas Peters, who finished 10th. That was 5 points, so he was even. He was neither purple or red with the litmus paper. Kit Alexander, Patrick Reed, tied 15th, 5 points, and Mike Lorenzo Vera, tied 10th, 5 points. So Kit Alexander came up with 10 points.
Mate, Kit's he's a fountain of knowledge, that dude.
Well, you and Michael, of course, will get your chance this week. So the presenters are down to 175. Co-presenters, which would be you, Johnny, stay at 115. And the guests, Michael, that's you. You are 105. So you and the co-presenters are in a real old tussle at the minute for superiority for second spot. Fantasy Race to Dubai game. In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Lee Findlay is still the leader on 28,296 points. The weekly title went to Oliver Jorgensen, whose team contains Sergio Garcia, Nikolai Højgaard and Matt Wallace. Now, how would you put Nikolai Højgaard in your Fantasy Six? Why would you pick him?
Why would you pick him? Well,
he's barely been on tour.
Well, you wouldn't pick him. I not yet, anyway. No, without question. But, I mean, after that...
That's impressive.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't get it, mate. I don't get it. I wouldn't put him in, obviously, for that reason alone. He's just a young buck coming up.
Well, if you want to get involved in the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, you can do it by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Top 10, please, in the Race to Dubai, John.
Well, you got Xander Schauffele, who had a well, poor performance at the Porsche European Open. I didn't down to win that bad boy. Erik van Rooyen, which has got his first win in Sweden. That was nice to see. Tipped him a few times. Lou Oosterhuizen, right just in front of him. Then Kevin Kistner, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood. Oh, well, after playing only, 13 events, Matt Wallace on 19 events, John Rahm only playing 9, Bernd Wiesberger, what a year, Rob.
Yeah, much better.
Unbelievable after his wrist injury. 22 events he's played, and then the mighty Shane Lowry, Open champion.
Champion golfer of the year.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, tremendous. Okay, let's concentrate now on what happened in Scotland. Michael was there. Solheim Cup, Europe versus the United States, was incredible. Michael, you were there. The atmosphere must have been amazing. And the crowds did really well because the weather on Saturday was horrendous.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was, to be honest, probably tropical for Scotland, but I think for most other people, the American team included, it wasn't the best. Winds gusting 30, 40 miles an hour. That horrible smeary rain. It was tough conditions, no doubt about it. But the crowd was sensational from start to finish. 85 to 90,000 people, I think it was, that turned up across the week, which is a record for a women's golf event in Scotland. I actually think it might be a record for any women's sporting event in Scotland. So I think, you know, everyone fully bought into it and what a match they got as a reward.
Johnny, how much do you love team match play events in golf?
I don't think there's any better format, I will definitely say that, in golf for me. I love match play. Don't get to see it very often, but when we do, we're so blessed that our team spirit, especially Europe, and that's me being biased, just gives us everything that you could possibly want. And if you weren't a golfer, you're going to want to pick up a set of golf clubs and start it up. That's for sure, because, you know, after seeing Medina back in 2012, then seeing this now, just electrifying and gives me goosebumps. Got emotional, actually. You know, when Pettersson hold that putt on the last, I was emotional because you're feeling all the emotions from the crowd, the other players running on the green, just the whole build-up to that. And she's being slated, Pettersson, saying, you know, how did she get the wild card at the end? And then there she is with the 8-footer on the last, drains it. In great fashion, celebrates, hugs her opponent, first of all, which is brilliant. Then the team roll on and, well, I just love it. I honestly love it. And it's a shame we don't get to see more of it because it really does bring everyone together. You know, it puts all the Race to Dubai out the way and playing for points and keeping your jobs out the window. This just becomes a team event and it's wear your heart on your sleeve.
It finished 14.5 to Europe, 13.5 to the United States. It couldn't have been closer. The Europeans led by 4.5 to 3.5 after the first day. And then, Michael, it was 8 all after day 2. And then did you think the writing was on the wall going into the singles that Europe hadn't built a lead up in the team part of this competition and would struggle in the singles?
Yeah, absolutely I did. I had the Americans winning it probably, I guess, 16-12, I was thinking this time yesterday. Simply because they're so good in the singles format. I think, you know, it's that single-mindedness, isn't it, American players to really have, whether male or female. And they were stacked pretty heavy at the top of the order. I think Julie Inkster, the US captain, sent out. And let me see, it was Daniel Kang went out first. Then you had Lexi Thompson up there in match 3. So she put out 3 of her big guns pretty early doors, really looking to try and build some early momentum and then kind of masked a few of her rookies. Then had a few more experienced players to try and close it out if it got that far. So I just looked at the singles order and I thought the way that Julie Inkster set it up, she was, I fancied them to do it. But the Europeans, I don't know what happened yesterday. I'm still trying to process a lot of it. But, you know, Carlotta Saganda, for example, out there in that first match, she played 5 matches. Only Aza Muñoz played more holes over the course of the week. But, you know, Carlotta went into the singles yesterday, having played 4 times already and hadn't won a point. She had 2 halves and 2 defeats. And the pressure was on her to deliver a point against Daniel Kang, who's a really feisty, kind of, I suppose, the Patrick Reed of that American team. She's a combative character. So the pressure was all on Carlotta to deliver a point, and she duly did. Georgia Hall taking down Lexi Thompson, who was really struggling, has to be said, with some back issues. She was getting her caddy to tee the ball up for her in most holes. For Georgia to take down Lexi was tremendous. And the momentum seemed to then be with Europe, but it was just ebbs and flows and ebbs and flows all the way through until it looked as though the US had it. But what a finish, you know, needing only a half point from one of the last 3 matches on the course to retain the trophy. The USA looked like they had it in the bag. And then, well, just it went crazy after that. It was just an unbelievable afternoon's golf.
And to say that somebody is their Patrick Reed, it's that's not a put down. That's a badge of honour, because you want a guy like Patrick Reed if you're a Ryder Cup team and you're American in your side. Another Corey Pavin, Jose Maria Olathabal, Seve. You know, you want one of those guys in your team. And we were sort of arguing, was it Daniel Kang or was it Nelly Korda? We were going to give the Patrick Reed Award to Nelly Korda. She had a shout as well.
Yeah, I think Nelly, well, it was her first appearance in the match and she acquitted herself so well. I think she's probably the most, out with Lexi, probably the most talented, naturally gifted player on the team. But no, for me, Danielle is the closest thing they've got to a Patrick Reed, and it's certainly a compliment. You know, she stoked the fires before she came over, saying that she was coming to try and make her opponents cry.
Yeah.
Said she was wanting to steal their souls. You know, she's quite brazen, quite outspoken. But yeah, you need somebody like that, because something that the Americans have been accused of for the past, I don't know, 20 years or more in match play events, whether Ryder Cup or Solheim, is that they don't want it as much as the Europeans. You know, that we have this great sort of team unity that brings us together and that we desperately, desperately want to win, whereas for the Americans, maybe not so much. So you need somebody like that in your corner, and Danielle is absolutely that person. She's as fierce a competitor as I've ever seen, especially for someone so diminutive and quite, you know, fragile looking, sure, I suppose, in a lot of ways.
Johnny, Michael mentioned a very good thing there about, you know, the Americans kind of feeling superior.
Yeah.
Is it easier to have that unity and that togetherness if you are the, and I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but if you are the inferior team, like the Europeans in the world rankings are always a lesser,
yeah, I know what
than
you're
the Americans
get
are. They're always, so is it easier to have that team unity and bonding when you are going in as the underdogs? Nearly always.
Yeah, well, I feel being the underdog is the best. I want to be the underdog. I want to be able to chew at the ankles of the hierarchy and try and bring them down, back down to my level, and or raise my game and beat them. But for the Americans to hold
You've taken this underdog label to sort of literal levels, haven't you?
Oh, mate, I remember when my dog had took a few people out once before. But, yeah. I think the Americans, though, it's hard, you know, you can ride that wave in your confidence when your class is unbeatable in a way, or it's going to be virtually impossible for you to beat them, or you've got to pull out all the stops and everything got to go your way to
like
be
when
victorious.
The American team went to Le Golf National, they were
exactly
arguing, is this the greatest Ryder Cup team that's ever been assembled, world ranking-wise, achievement-wise?
Oh.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah, and I mean, Europe, well, just spanked their bottom blue. They really did. I mean, they came back, they showed their guts, determination, their unity as a team. I just, you know, having Laura Davis there as well with an amazing kind of past and record to her, I mean, the backroom staff there really give them a world of confidence. I think the unity and just the whole charisma that the European Tour, European Ladies game has there at the Solheim Cup just came through because of that.
Michael, do you suggest that we might see a large bulk of that team when they take the cup back across to America to try and win on American soil?
It's really hard to say. I mean, obviously, Suzanne's now retired.
Sure.
The way to bow out that was, you know, but winning the Solheim Cup. Yeah, I think there's a good nucleus in Europe just now. Georgia Hall, I think, is going to be a star for years to come. To win 4 out of 4, when, even though it was only her second appearance in the match, there was, I think, pressure on her to step up and deliver. And she did. You know, 4 points
and hadn't had a great year.
And hadn't had a great year, precisely. You know, so she pulled it out the bag when it mattered. Then you look at other people like the rookie Celine Boutier, who was one of Katrina Matthews' wild cards. And again, she stepped up and delivered 4 points out of 4. And I don't think anyone could have predicted that. So you think to yourself, yeah, these girls are going to be around for a while to come. But equally, you look back 2 years ago to Iowa and you go, well, where's Madeline Sagstrom gone, for example? You know, there were good players in that team then, I think people expected to be the cornerstones of European Solheim Cup teams. And I think the strength and depth is actually better in European ladies golf than a lot of people give it credit for. My only criticism, my only hope is that they just play a bit faster next time around.
I was just going to bring that up. There was definitely, it's like the elephant in the room. You can't talk about the whole event without talking about the speed of play, Johnny.
Oh, well, it's real bee in my bonnet, that is, speed of play. I mean, 6 hours to play match play. I mean, what's that all about? Come on, you know, pull your socks up, get a move on. I mean, you should be sprinting in between shots if that's the case. I mean, but the dwelling over shots are taking so much time over it. And no exception to the rule. I mean, it's happening in the pro game all the way down the rankings from men's to women's. And I mean, in match play, I mean, 6 hours. Come on, Rob, that's ridiculous.
But it's all the little things that take... I watched Danielle Kang. So she walks onto the tee and stands there on the tee on her own. And then her caddy walks onto the tee and brings the club to her and then walks off the tee.
What's that all about?
Listen, it's just... You add up all those little things. It adds minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes. Just never ready. Club should be in your hand. Your go. You step on the tee and you hit. That's it. Not walk onto the tee and then wait for my club to be delivered FedEx to me from the edge of the tee.
But it should be a law, shouldn't it? There should be somewhere at the start of the year where you go into a massive conference room, the hierarchy are at the top, and they just say, oi, you do it this way, or we're, you know, docking you shots.
Golf has got a problem. The European Tour, bless them. And
you know something?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, Johnny makes a good point saying, you know, the players should all be brought together and, you know, have it explained to them what's expected. Well, they actually were at the Solheim Cup. Yeah, I spoke to one of the rules officials, a senior rules official, on the eve of the tournament, saying, so, look, what's the deal here with slow play? And I was told that there's going to be no mercy, zero tolerance. And so they published the expected and allotted times. 4 balls, 4 hours, 35 minutes. Foursomes, 4 hours, 35 minutes. Singles, 4 hours. So I get the conditions were tough on Saturday, but, you know, an hour and a half over time par?
Well, is that...
I just don't think that is acceptable.
No,
in way, shape, or form.
It's not.
It ain't acceptable, mate, is it? My God, it just ain't, because, it blows my mind. I mean, there I am watching it on TV just thinking, come on, we'll get down the pub in about an hour's time. What's going on? About an hour overdue. But it's just like, baffling me.
Well, because, you know, it's frustrating because you have this huge global audience, probably more people than ever in the UK, at least, watching the Solheim Cup on TV this past week. Following it, paying attention to what's going on, and they're seeing slow play. Now, if I'm golf's authorities, then I'm dealing with that there and then. I saw some people on Twitter at the weekend, even Thomas Bjorn, who I've got a lot of respect for, but he's saying, no, this isn't the week to start penalising slow play. No, that's completely wrong, Thomas. This is exactly the week to do it. Show people who are new to the game that actually we do enforce our own rules. We're not going to take you away from your families for 6 hours every week when you want to go and play up your local club. It can be played faster.
Of course it can.
This is the time to start showing it.
Yeah. I'm giving a big up to the players in the European Tour. They've got together. It's come from the players' committee. The new rules they're going to put in force. Penalty shots will be coming. It's as simple as that. And you watch. The threat of penalty shots, people are going to play quicker.
You know it.
You know it. Yeah. You can give me 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 fine. A shot could be worth 250,000.
Well,
half a million. Could
their
be
job.
Worth anything. So,
And
I commend the European Tour on that. The PGA Tour have got no intention of doing anything like that. They're still crunching numbers.
Players got the power on the PGA Tour.
They sure have, yeah. There's a four-man policy board, and they do hold all the strings, no doubt about it. Well done, by the way, to Katrina Mathieu. She said it was the defining moment of her golfing career to put all that effort in as a captain, taking on the might of the United States at Glen Eagles and win in front of Scottish fans. I mean, international fans, but a lot of Scottish fans for Katrina. Was absolutely wonderful. So many congratulations, Beanie, and to your players, and happy retirement, Suzanne Pedersen. She's been a great player for a long, long time, and now her life's moving into a different phase.
It is, and she was hugging her babba there right at the end, and just just absolutely so relieved that everything had gone away, Rob.
Yeah,
and
it was the perfect send off, wasn't it,
mate? A perfect send off, perfect putt to finish, and the skipper just said some great stuff, and you just hope now. You know, ladies golf in Europe is on the up now, because
that
is a massive springboard.
It'll give it a big, big boost. Brilliant Solheim Cup. Okay, Challenge Tour. Adrian Meronk took a huge step towards becoming the first ever Polish holder of a European Tour card by winning the Open to Portugal at Morgado Golf Resort and breaking into the top 15, which is crucial on the Challenge Tour. Top 15, and you pave your way to the European Tour. On the road to Mallorca, the 26-year-old posted a closing 6-under-par round of 66 in the Algarve to reach 15-under-par and secure a 2-shot win ahead of Sebastian García Rodríguez from Spain. He finished second on 13-under-par. And as before, we mentioned Joaquin Niemann became the youngest international winner on the PGA Tour since 1923 with a 6-shot win at the Military Tribute at the Greenbrier. That's why we mentioned Rory and Seve, because international wins. The 20-year-old carded the final round of 64 to secure his maiden victory in his 44th start, 21 under par, 20 years of age. Very impressive, Michael.
Yeah, very, very impressive indeed. And again, so many great young players out there playing so well. As a proud Scot, can I just say I'm delighted still to see that Callum Hill is top of the Challenge Tour rankings, you know, sitting there. Looks like he has punched his ticket of the European Tour next season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm delighted to see Callum doing well. And Joaquin Neiman over in the States. It's just, the game is flooded at the moment with brilliant young talent. It's amazing to see.
And
so much for it being an old man's game.
As you're waving your saltire very proudly up there, I'm going to give you another name that I'm really enjoying watching, and that's Bobby McIntyre. Robert McIntyre, Bob McIntyre.
Yeah.
I think you can have Bob and you can have Robert, but you can't have Bobby. Tremendous player.
He's absolutely phenomenal. You know, we've been quite negative up here in Scotland over the past... There is a shock. But yeah, there's been a malaise. We've seen a lot of young players coming through the amateur ranks, but then not really make the transition to the pro game all that well. And I don't know, maybe we've just been spoiled by success. You know, Monty did us so well for so long. Sandy, Sam Torrance, you know, these guys, you know, Andy Coulthard as well, they gave us so many good times for so long. Then it dried up. But look, I know Bob hasn't won yet, but he's edging ever closer and he's just a joy to watch. Again, plays by feel and instinct and such a humble lad as well. Goes home to Oban after every tournament, this remote seaside town. That,
Oban, you know, not exactly a hub for world travel, is it, Oban?
Well, he's putting it on the map now, so you never know. They might have to expand their tourism portfolio. But, you know, look, it's a three-hour drive from Glasgow to get there, so it is remote. It's out in the middle of nowhere. But I think I love the fact that Bob goes there and he's just such a home bird. So humble, grounded, and long may it continue. He's an absolute revelation.
You'll be surprised to know that I know Oban well. I've got the ferry across to Mull and then gone the extra ferry to Iona, so I know that area very well.
My goodness, you're a better travelled man than me. I've gone as far as Oban and that's about it.
He's so well travelled, Michael.
You have to go to Mull, and there's a single track road that runs across the island itself. The geography of the island is incredible, but there's a single track road that you really shouldn't be doing much more than 5 miles an hour. But all the people that live on Mull drive at 95 miles an hour on a single track road. It's hell. It really is. It's unbelievable.
That's local knowledge.
Oh, yes, you'd be careful if you go there. But, and then you get across to Iona eventually. A sensational part of the world, it really is. And that Nyman is also the first player from Chile to win in the PGA Tour. So just to sort of cross the T's and dot the I's on that one. Johnny, top 10 in the world, please.
Right then, top 10. There it is, Xander Schauffele. There he is, the main man. Then Francesco Molinari, who's defending his trophy here at the PGA BMW Championship, then Tiger Woods, the mighty Tiger Woods in 8, Patrick Cantlay at 7, John Rahm at 6, Justin Thomas at 5, Justin Rose, Englishman at 4, Dustin Johnson lurking behind, Rory McIlroy in 2nd, and the mighty, powerful Brooks Koepka in 1st.
Very good, Johnny. Let's talk about now one of the biggest events on the European Tour. It's a Rolex Series event. A lot of people say it is the flagship event, the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. And Michael, I hear the weather is going to be good for the week and the course is in incredible condition. And historically, the PGA was always in May. When you get to what used to be the match play in the autumn, Wentworth was always at its best.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd 100% agree. You know, it was always nice to go to Wentworth for the PGA, but won't lie, like having a second trip to go to for the match play was always one of the highlights. The format helped, of course, but the course is always so well presented, and it's just, for me, it's the right time of year to be hosting the PGA there. So if the forecast is as they say it's going to be, and with the field that's assembled, it's so, so strong, then I think we're in for a great week. I can't wait to... I'll be watching it all unfold from the comfort of my home, because I'm on holiday for this week after a busy week at Solheim.
Lovely.
But I can't wait to watch it. It's going to be brilliant.
Give us a hint, some of the headliners that are playing, Johnny.
Well, it's star-studied, as you said, Michael. Francesco Molinari defending it, back there again. Then you got the mighty Rory McIlroy, just getting the old Jack Nicklaus trophy, wasn't he? Presented the other day for the third time.
Yeah, the PGA Tour Player of the Year.
Yeah, PGA, you know, obviously picked by the players, which is awesome.
And the PGA of America gave it to Brooks Koepka.
Did they?
Yeah, he won the PGA Player of the Year, but Rory, voted by the players, won the PGA Tour Player of the Year, that's why he was with Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, how good's that?
Yeah.
He said he got goosebumps. You seen the goosebumps that came up on his arm?
I saw that, yeah.
But then you got like Paul Casey, winner at obviously the Porsche, then Fleetwood, Justin Rose, John Rahm. I mean, nice to see him back in the Open champion. Shane Lowry, Tony Finau, my favourite, I reckon. I reckon he's going to have a good week at Wentworth. Tony Finau, Billy Horschel, well, Andrew Putnam, Patrick Reed, Ian Poulter. Awesome field, I got to say. And that's a big powerhouse starting 10 or 11 I've labelled off there, but there's so many more.
But you know what? Just to back ref the start of the show, where is Sergio?
Yeah, where's Sergio? What's he doing? Is he having a week off?
He's not playing here.
I know.
I'm pretty sure he's not playing at the Sanderson Farms.
Yeah, no, he's not. I think he's just having a rest. I mean, where's he headed? Because I don't know if he's going back up to the slopes to back up into Switzerland to go and chill out with his good lady and the baby. But, yeah, I find that unbelievable when the man's on form and he's not there.
Incredible.
On a golf course, that'd suit him as well.
Oh, absolutely. The Wednesday, by the way, is a star-studded pro-am. And anybody that's a celebrity, sportsman, ex-sportsman that plays golf, it's kind of... If you don't get to play at Wentworth, you've been dissed, overlooked, you've been discarded, you're useless. Jimmy Anderson, Ben Stokes, Josh Butler, Joe Root, Ryan Giggs, Paul Scholes, AP McCoy, Sam Quick, Mike Tindall, Niall Horan, Chris Evans, Piers Morgan, the list goes on.
Oh my God, and I tell you what, Ben Stokes and Josh Butler and Joe Root, they're going to be absolutely knackered. They just come off the ashes.
Well, I think they'll be on a high because they squared it off, didn't
they?
Well, that'd
be 2-2. True.
2-2. They'll be on a high.
But, I mean, star-studded, like you say. And, yeah, I tell you what, spectators are going to love it, aren't they?
Of course they are.
They're going to absolutely love it.
They'll be running out of Sharpies, won't they?
Yeah. And you've got Rudimental, haven't you, playing up there in the... On a little gig, I think, on the Wednesday or the Thursday. I think they're going to do a little gig. I think it was Simple Minds last year.
There's certainly going to be music on. I don't know who the band is, but there's going to be music at the event itself. I'm wondering, Michael, are you a sort of arch pro-am player?
I've played in some pro-ams, yes.
Oh, tales of Michael's... give us tales of Michael's worst pro-am moment.
Definitely the most nerve-wracking, so it makes it probably the worst, was last year I was playing in the Scottish Open pro-am at Gullen. I got an invite through the tournament organisers, and unbeknownst to me, they'd given me Rafa Cabrera-Bello to play with. And he was obviously defending champion from having won at Dundonald the previous year. So it was a shotgun start, 1 o'clock tee off, and I only found out that I was playing with Rafa the day before. I'm going, oh, brilliant, that's going to be good fun. I've spoken to him plenty of times, lovely guy. Thought that'll be nice and relaxed. Then turn up and see the draw sheet, and I realise that as he's defending champion, they're putting me off the first. Where there's a pretty big grandstand behind the hole. And the first, if you remember, at Gullen, when the Scottish Open goes there, is actually the second hole.
Yes, I know.
The first hole.
It's quite tight, Michael, isn't it? It's quite tight.
Very tight. It's probably my least favourite hole of the 54 holes at Gullen, and probably by some measure. So that's what I'm teeing off. It doesn't suit my shot shape in the slightest. So... get there on the tee nice and early, which was the worst thing I ever did because I saw the stand fill up, then it was full, and then I saw the sides of the tee, they started to fill as well, and next thing I know there are people probably halfway down the hole on both sides, and Rafa hits this beautiful flush iron, just stripes it down the middle. Then I get called onto the tee, and all I can remember doing at that point in time, I'm trying to look cool and relaxed, inside my heart's going, you know, 200 miles an hour. And no word of a lie, I remember looking at both sides of the fairway, looking at the faces, and I'm thinking, which one am I going to hit? And I was that nervous. I was trembling, but I managed to get the ball away just about. I stuck it on the right-hand side of the fairway. Nice wee smattering of applause. I might even have tipped my cap to the watching crowds, a little bit of a club twirl as well. And yeah, honestly, I can say that I have never, ever in my life been as nervous as that. And we walk off the tee and I said to Rafa, I said, geez, that's nerve-wracking. He looks at me and goes, hey, you should try doing it in the Ryder Cup, mate.
Yeah, there's always levels, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, even for the best players in the world, they get to that first tee in the Ryder Cup and they get super nervous. So let's talk about the runners and riders then. Rory comes there as the highest-ranked player in the world number two.
Yeah.
And must start as favourite.
Yeah, without question, my favourite, definitely. Rory, I mean... what a year he's had. Beautiful, playing absolutely amazing golf. So, yeah, he's my number one.
John Rahm.
Yeah.
Well, brilliant win in Ireland. Back across on European soil. He won in Spain last year, won his National Open. He has to be a runner and rider, Michael.
Yeah, definitely. It's strange with John because you forget that he's only really been pro for, what is it, 3 years? It feels like he's been around for every bit as long as the likes of or Spieth or, you know, these kind of guys. He is still relatively new to the pro ranks, but he's just clocking up wins and top 10 seemingly every other week. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Again, like his compatriot Sergio, questionable temper. But when he plays his best, when he keeps a lid on it. So if he can harness it this week, why can't he contend?
Who do you fancy, Johnny?
Outside the top 50 last year, it would have been, I go for Bernd Wiesberger because he's on the crest of a wave. But, mate, I can't. I'm a cross between a Rory McIlroy, a Fleetwood and a Tony Finau. I am. Fancy them three, really.
I see Tony Finau on social media because he only swings it three quarters of the way back.
Exactly, a bit like John Ram does.
But he was with his coach, swinging it too horizontal and he was getting 200 miles an hour ball speed.
What?
Yes. They had a speed reader for his contact with the ball. He was getting 200 miles an hour ball speed.
Well, mate, you can't keep it on the golf course at that rate, surely. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Incredible, yeah.
Three quarters of a swing, I mean, obviously it helps you keep it down the middle and they got plenty of power in them. So, yeah, taking it past Egan, over 200 miles an hour. Goodness gracious me.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. So you had three that you'd narrowed it down to, but we need you to narrow it down even more than that.
Well,
you're counting Wiesberger as your outsider, are you?
I am counting Wiesberger as my outsider.
You cheeky dog, okay, right.
I'm having him as my outsider, and I'm
loving it, but who's your super favourite?
Got a sweet spot for Fleetwood, man, but I got to go for world number two, Rory. I got him.
Wow, you've really stuck your neck out, haven't you? You've gone for the world number two,
man,
and the guy's just won Bernd Wiesberger.
Put all my eggs in one basket on that one, haven't I?
All right, I always tend to go last on this, so Michael, you're next. He's taken two of your picks, so who's your next two?
My outside the top 50, we've spoken about him earlier. I'm going to go full Scottish. I'm going with Bob McIntyre. The win is coming. He's had three top, I think he's had three runner-up finishes this year, most recently in the last event that he played. He's had a week off to recharge the batteries, and I think he's going to absolutely love Wentworth.
You could pick him as your number one pick.
I'm tempted to, but I'm actually going to go for my number one pick with Matt Wallace. You know, he just loves the big stage. He's in form, as we saw at the weekend, loves that big stage. He'll relish playing in front of a home crowd. And I think he'll love the fact that there's a really strong field that's assembled on his patch as well. I think Matt plays his best when he's playing against guys who have a better ranking than him, arguably guys who are better golfers than him. It seems to make him raise his game. So, yeah, he's my guy to watch this week for sure.
What are you going for,
Rob? Who's left? I'm going to go for Paul Casey.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say I call this home because he was a Burr Hill lad and Wentworth is around the corner. So I'm going to go for Paul Casey, who just recently won in the United States and he's playing great. So I'm going to have Casey and I'm going to have...
Bum, bum, bum.
I'm going to have... And this is sort of squaring the circle. We had a Norwegian retire in Susanne Pedersen and we've got a Norwegian coming across for his first European Tour event on European soil, Victor Hovland. So Victor Hovland is going to be a huge, huge start. So I'm going to have him.
Imagine if he won it. Oh, my God.
Do you know he's tied with Bob Estes the record in the United States for consecutive rounds in the 60s. He's had 17 rounds in the 60s on the bounce. And the only other person to have that number was Bob Estes. And that's a record that stood for 20 or 30 years. So even more than that. So
he's guacamole.
He's had 17 rounds on the bounce in the 60s.
Well,
that takes
massive.
Some doing, doesn't it?
Oh, that's unbelievable, impressive. What? Consistency.
Yeah.
Struth. That's a robot.
I know. So I'm excited to see how these six players perform over the next few days. I'm excited because you all kind of got what you wanted.
Well,
you've gone the old world number two route, Rory.
Oh, come on.
Playing great. Players, player of the year on the PGA Tour and the world number two. And Michael, you've gone very much the home draw with Bobby McIntyre. And I keep saying Bobby McIntyre, but he doesn't...
Bobber.
I believe he doesn't like Bobby. You can have Bob, or you can have Robert. Go on, Bobby. Absolutely superb, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I wish I was going. Are you going to be down at Wentworth?
No, I'm not going. I'm not going.
No,
I'm going to be...
There's going to be flat-out coverage for the whole...
Oh, mate, it's going to be unbelievable.
All day from Thursday to Sunday, it's going to be Wentworth... centric, so yeah, looking forward to a massive event. Should be really, really good.
It's going to be class. I'm up in Aberdeen.
Are you playing or what are you doing? Annoying people up
there. I'm talking a good game on the Europro Tour
up there.
The final one of the year for the PGA Europro. So, yeah.
And what's next for you, Michael, after your week off?
Yeah, it'll be the Dunhill Links
next
week in Scotland. Always one of the highlights of the year.
Definitely.
Three fantastic golf courses. It's a bit like the Pebble Beach of the European Tour, isn't it, in terms of the Pro-Am. And a lot of excitement this year because Justin Timberlake is going to be taking part for the first time. So
and Spider-Man.
Quite a diverse audience.
So Justin Timberlake will have a small crowd wandering around with him, all under the age of 17.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's playing, is he?
Spider-Man, Tom Holland.
I was going to say which one. There's been a few.
Oh, no, it's Tom Holland, yeah, the youngster. He's playing, he loves it.
Oh, that'd be... It's just one of my favourite weeks, the Dunhill Links. Just really, really good. The vibe is good.
Amazing.
St Andrews is awesome. Is there another place on this planet as unique as St Andrews, Michael?
No, absolutely not. When it comes to golf, no. It's such a special place. Everything in the town revolves around golf. And if I didn't live in Glasgow, then I would absolutely live in St Andrews. It's just such a cool, special place. I love it.
Yeah, if you just a cold November day, if you've somehow had an opportunity to play St Andrews and you come up the last day and you're looking at the old grey town, because a bit like Cronsoussier, St Andrews golf course is literally right in the middle of the town.
Yeah,
there will always be people around that 18th green. It doesn't matter if it's lashing coming in sideways. There are people around that 18th green just watching people finish their rounds of golf.
It's the best place in the world. I know that. I've played it a few times now, just rocked up, able to get a game. The other day, we got a guy who's doing well on the Europro. He has never played it. He's from Newmacca, where I'm headed, called Neil Fenwick. Right, and he shot 8 under. First ever time he got to play St Andrews and made an eagle, hold this monster putt on the last hole for an eagle to shoot 8 under, just in a nice, you know, willy-nilly kind of round with his mates. And the crowd that were around that 18th, like you said, Rob, all cheering him, just coming off the streets.
That's amazing.
Seeing it, and he said, I felt like I won the Open. He said it gave me goosebumps.
I'll tell you what, his first round around St Andrews, 8 under par.
8 under.
Life's going to get worse for him. That is it for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll have a full review of what's going to be a fantastic event, the BMW PGA Championship. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, as before mentioned. But for now, for Michael McEwen, who's gone for...
Matt Wallace and Bob McIntyre.
Beautifully done. Johnny Morgan.
Rory McIlroy, world number two, and Bernd Wiesberger.
And myself, Victor Hovland and Paul Casey. It's goodbye.